first in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
It's Christmas week, everyone, and we're here on WSMN 1590 AM, WSMN and 95.3 FM. We are live here, at least we're live if you're listening Tuesday, the week of Christmas, December 21st. And I say that only so that you'll know, if you're listening on the podcast, that you can call in, you can listen live and call in every Tuesday, Thursday at 1 p.m., Tuesday and Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And, you know, some of those folks like Arizona, I love that. They don't go for daylight savings time. So right now, I think they're the same. I don't know how. I can never keep track. I can't even keep track from having gone from Mountain to Central time. Nevertheless, welcome, Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm Karen Cataline, your host, and yes, spouting off is the name of the game, especially when there's so much. The communists, if you were listening to the news, don't want us to know about or talk about that they want us to shut up about. So that's why spouting off is now a very positive thing. I've heard it said in the negative, but it's a positive thing. We're going to go right off the bat here into a couple of clips. I was laughing in a sad sort of way. Somebody named JP, and I love this guy. I'm going to give him lots of free publicity because he's on Rumble, and his name is JP. And I'll give you the information in a minute how you can find him, but I'm going to play just a little bit of his humor, because, you know, the left has always had a monopoly on, almost a monopoly on entertainment and Hollywood and humor, and conservatives have been a little bit late to the game, and they're working on it. And in this case, I want you to hear the very first of this. This is a couple of clips that I want to talk about with you. Partly because they're getting ready to tighten the noose once again. We know what it is. They roll out a new variant. Nobody has a test for that variant. Nobody knows how they know there's a new variant since there is no test. Nobody's told us, well, what are the symptoms for that variant? And they're going through the Greek alphabet with variants. And then right after that, come the restrictions, the more restrictions, and more restrictions, and bullying and intimidation tactics if you don't go along with the restrictions and do as you're told. I don't know. Have we been here before? Is this like a deja vu all over again? And yet, do you know people? I know people. Do you know people who are still in denial about all of it? And for good reason, because who wants to believe that your government does not have your best interests at heart? I mean, I've always wanted to believe that at least the people we elected did have our best interests at heart. And ever since the jump the shark COVID 10 days to flatten the curve started, America changed drastically. This, I submit, ladies and gentlemen, was not an accident. So let's play the first cut about from JP, and I'll give you his information. I even posted it at my website in one of my latest posts, KarenCataline.com. Here's JP talking about in denial, about being in denial. Go.
Well, you know how the world's been drastically changing the past 2 years?
No, I honestly haven't noticed.
Well, I'm finding it harder and harder to stay in denial about what's really going on.
Sounds tough.
Yeah, I want to stay more committed to being wrong rather than admitting that I was wrong. But I'm struggling because things are getting pretty obvious.
So you're having trouble staying in denial?
Yes.
Well, that's where you're going wrong.
Denial isn't enough anymore. You need to be in denial that you're in denial.
Oh, so like two layers of denial?
Exactly.
So you're not in denial?
No, not at all.
Oh, I see. You're in denial that you're in denial.
Precisely. It's kind of like blissful intelligence, except it's numbness and not intelligent instead.
That's inspirational.
Oh, did you see the leader of the EU wants to get rid of the Nuremberg Code?
Isn't the Nuremberg Code that thing that was put in place after the Nazis' genocide of the Jewish people under the guise of medicine and science in order to protect the population from that same thing ever happening again?
Sure is. But I think now they're wanting to get rid of what protects people in order to better protect people.
Wouldn't that open the door for the same thing to happen again?
Probably, but I don't think that's the question they want us to ask.
What question do they want us to ask?
How many of those three scumbag white people that Kyle Rittenhouse shot in self-defense were innocent black people that he murdered out of hate? I'd say...
How about that? So while we're listening to this, engineer extraordinaire, otherwise known as Art, behind the glass, behind the proverbial glass that I can't see, he wrote, I love him. So he's pretty well known. His name is Awaken with JP. You can find him at Rumble. A couple of things before we hit the next cut. And I love that we're doing this because, again, we can always use more humor. And nowadays, the best kind of humor is mockery. Because what do? Do you keep trying to argue the same stuff with the same people who are in denial about being in denial? No. You have to use humor. Saturday Night Live has done this for years, but they always have the same targets. It's time to stop, you know, to stop letting them have a monopoly of humor. And JP does a lot of these. They're always funny. They're parodies of stuff. Just so you know, you could get him on Rumble and you can look up Awaken with JP, how liberals are in denial about what's going on. And he is both parts. He plays both parts. One of them is in a straitjacket. Gee, that's not significant, is it? That is exactly what they want to do to all of us, is put us in a mental and physical straitjacket, and they've never been more obvious about it. You know, that old phrase, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't after you. I'm not paranoid. I'm just trying to be a realist here as to what's going on. They stay with the same narrative no matter how ridiculous. Even some of the media is beginning to report that the people that are getting this so-called variant, which nobody has a test for, don't forget that, nobody has a test for it. So how do they know it's a variant? They don't. But some of the media is going off the reservation already and saying, well, most of the people that are getting this variant have been vaxxed. So what's their solution to that? Well, guess what? Get ready. Get ready, because there are already places like New York governor, who's even worse than the old governor, kind of like in Wizard of Oz. He's even worse than the other one. She's worse than the other one as far as policy goes. She's getting ready to redefine fully vaxxed. Now you're not fully vaxxed unless you've had two shots and a booster. How long before you're not fully vaxxed if you don't get a booster every 6 months? Did you know that Australia ordered 14 shots per person? I read that. 14 shots per person. I guess the vaccine doesn't work, ladies and gentlemen, because they have to keep jabbing you. And what's in that jab that they want to keep us addicted to? And how come? Well, see, I'm just going off. How come they keep suppressing treatments that are cheaper, less invasive, and more effective? Gee, I don't know. If you're not paying attention, you might be in denial about being in denial. Here is cut number two, Awaken with JP.
Janeiro tells me to think. Hey, man. What's that? Oh, I just got the latest booster that was designed for 2 variants ago in order to protect me from the current variant. And now, instead of a sticker, they just give you one of these.
Looks cool. What's it mean?
I don't know, but they told me it's what I am now. Powerful. A lot of people are getting microchipped now.
Dude, that's a crazy conspiracy theory.
Dude, it's been 2 years since we've been saying that, but people are doing it now. It's reality. Over 6,000 people in Sweden got microchipped. It's literally Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, and then he does, I highly recommend that you watch the entire thing. I'll tell you how long it is. It's only, well, it's about 7 or 8 minutes. So, yeah, it is the Stockholm Syndrome. And remember that we predicted so much of this before it actually happened, and we were called conspiracy theorists. Remember? Remember when they used the mask as the opening salvo in shutting down liberty in the free world, meaning the entire West and other countries that, you know, are trying to remain free? And we said, many of us said, not too many, said, those masks are conditioning. They are a symbol of submission. They do absolutely nothing. But even if they did, the government doesn't have a right to tell you to wear a rag on your face. But they have insisted they don't care how ineffective. It's a symbol of submission. But that was the old opening salvo. Most people said, well, they're only doing that until they can force vaccines. And people said, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. They would never do that. Force you to take an experimental shot? How about a shot that is proving to cause deadly, dangerous injuries and, in some people, death? They don't seem to care because they keep pushing the vaccines and the shots. And even now they want more shots, more shots, more shots. They don't care how deadly they are. They don't care that they're killing people. And they're ignoring the facts. As a matter of fact, they're making it as hard as possible for people to report injuries from the shots. Athletes are dropping dead on the field, but you must take your shot or you will lose your job. This is the matrix that we're living in. Is it any wonder that there is a new Matrix movie coming out? I wonder if it's about forced vaccines and people losing their right to their own body autonomy to make their own medical decisions. Let's face it, the lack of liberty and government forcing you to do as it says, go where you where it says, restricting your movement as is happening in Australia, that's all part and parcel of what is necessary for communism to flourish. You must empower the government. You must disempower the citizens, take away their rights so that you can impose communism. It is all, as David Horowitz said, for the revolution. We got to have time to play this last one. Let's do cut 3, microchips and prison.
Imagine how convenient it would be not having to carry our papers and not having any freedoms because we got microchipped. It would be delightful. Oh, speaking of showing your papers, in Austria, now they've put unobedient, uninjected people into an indefinite lockdown. Even better than that, Austria passed a law that requires all citizens to be injected by February. And if they don't, they go to prison. I just wish they could be even more strict and more obvious with what they're really doing. What are they really doing? Well, obviously taking away all resemblance of freedom in order to protect their people from a disease with a very dangerously high rate of survival.
I think I just got lost there. Did you go ahead, Art, and play the last part of that audio? Because I didn't hear it.
Yes, yeah. I did. Yep.
Okay.
It was great.
Very good.
I love JP.
Yes, thank you, Art. So it's so funny. It's kind of like when you're talking on the telephone on a cell phone with somebody and you keep going on and on and you think they can hear you and they call you back and go, sorry, I lost you. Well, let me just make a comment or two and then we have to take a break in a minute anyway. I said, do you know people like this who are colluding with the government to shut down their fellow citizens' freedom? Did you hear one of his characters say, well, I just wish they could even be more severe with people, put them in jail for not taking the vax, for not taking the jab. Astonishing. The same left, and I've said this before, but I must say it again, the same left that were all about do your own thing, my body, my choice, I can say and do what I want, suddenly they are the biggest dutiful robots, zealots, and zombies of anybody. And I'm not sure that you can convince them by just telling them that. Maybe you need to send them JP's videos. Send them how liberals are in denial about what's going on. Let's see if that might work. We got to get people to wake up, don't we? We're going to take a quick break. Hopefully I will remain connected. And when we come back, we will have a terrific guest. I'll tell you about him in just a moment. Karen Cataline, Christmas week here on WSMN. You're listening to Spouting Off. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hi, it's Olivia Munn with my shelter pets, Frankie and Chance. Say hi, guys. When I adopted them, I discovered that they both have incredible personalities. Chance's sole purpose in life is to love and to be loved. Frankie is a little bit of a scoundrel and always entertaining. They're a little bit of a lot of things, but they're all pure love. Adopt pure love at theshelterpetproject.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maddie's Fund.
Hey guys, it's me, Isabella Gomez, filling in for Smokey Bear because he's got more to say than just...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Like, if you're outside enjoying a barbecue, don't let a hamburger distract you from fire safety. Make sure you aren't dumping your hot coals or ashes onto the ground because that could start a wildfire. So take wildfire prevention seriously and let's save the world one day at a time. Juntos con Smokey Bear, podemos hacerlo. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back. Before we get to our next guest, I just want to let you know, if you are still looking for Christmas gifts, and you can do that, or you can send a gift after the fact if necessary, and you don't want to go to Amazon, all of you know that MyPillow doesn't have a big box store or shopping channels because they've been affected by the cancel culture. But Mike Lindell and his team want to pass the savings on to you. Right now, you can get the lowest price in history on MyPillow. Regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-867-0416. Use the promo code RAM for the absolute best price. RAM, that's RAM. And MyPillow has close to 200 items for Christmas. So save, I think it's much more than 200 items now. I've looked at the website. And there's many more than that. So save up to 60% using the code RAM. Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. Well, we have a distinguished guest holding on the line for us, and we are so glad to have him. His name is Eric J. Karen. So from one Karen to another, I wonder if he's been joked about his name and mine. He's a dynamic former U.S. diplomat and U.S. special agent for 25 years, successfully conducted and managed covert operations relating to national security, transnational crime, and money laundering. He's held senior positions within Homeland Security, and his accomplishments have been highlighted by media outlets from around the world and received U.S. Attorney General's Award Endeavors in Furthering the Interest of U.S. National Security. Wow. Thank you, Eric Karen, for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Hey, Karen, what an honor to be on with you. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Well, I am too, and boy, there are so many things that...
Just lost you.
Gosh, I keep losing you there.
I'm back.
Yes, we keep losing a connection here. I don't know why. I think the gremlins are out. You're in security. You can help us understand why that is. But nonetheless, I don't know where I lost you, but I was saying that, you know, we continue to have these school shootings, and you're of the opinion that what we're doing with school shootings has not been working, obviously, because we continue to have them. So tell us your take on all of this and what we need to be doing better.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of empty Christmas cheers this holiday season, unfortunately. And it did not have to be, Karen. Our country has failed our students in so many ways. I mean, let's just look back, you know, Columbine, you know, dozens of deaths since 1999 on that day. And then since that day, 157 deaths, children and educators in our schools.
Yes.
And, you know, hundreds of injuries, over 351 injuries, thousands affected by it who witnessed these shootings. You know, a place that should be a place of security and learning has become, in some respects, a prison. And the equipment, if you will, that we bought, the hundreds of millions of dollars, is not the answer. Metal detectors and bulletproof glass, it's not the answer. What we're feeling to recognize, this is about our children and their mental well-being, and we are not providing the services needed from early age, from elementary through middle school into the high school where most of the shootings happen. We are not holistically, I'll say, grading our children holistically, mentally. We care more about the A's and B's in math and science, but we're not looking at them mentally and how they're adjusting to life, as we all have to do. And we're all faced with some serious problems in our lives. And children, of course, are no different. We need to have what I call a behavioral assessment team at each school in America. Some people will say, Karen, that's tracking, and that's 1984 George Orwell, and we can't be tracking our children and have an assessment team looking at our children multiple times a year because people change throughout the year. And it's unfortunate because we're missing key indicators that lead to an event, which, as we know, most of these events happen across America. There's plenty of signs that something bad is about to happen, but we miss it, or we don't coordinate amongst ourselves. So this behavioral assessment team will help identify potential problems, children, and correct these problems and intervene earlier rather than later.
I have a question about that. So you're saying track the students now?
Yeah.
I'm not too comfortable about that either, only because it seems like whatever massive solutions are to problems, they always do more to intrude upon law-abiding citizens and never go after the people who are at risk. If you do that to everyone, it sort of reminds me of everybody taking off their shoes now at the airport because they can't keep us safe. Why do such a collectivist thing like that? Aren't there better ways? You don't think so?
No, you know, so it's part part of a more of a holistic, you know, solution in my mind. It's, you know, part of a mentoring program that we need to implement in all our schools. It's part of teaching our kids life skills such as hygiene and finance and effective communication skills. It's part of a larger wellness program of training our staff and schools and parents to address these issues sooner rather than later. What I'm saying is that the behavioral assessment team identifies children sooner rather than later so we can intervene and provide the necessary services yep. that they need.
Hmm. But we have that to some extent. I mean, wasn't there that, I hope you don't mind a little bit of pushback here, but
no,
wasn't
please.
That the case in Florida, in the Marjorie Douglas school? That kid, everybody said, was a problem, and the same bureaucratic people ignored it.
I don't think
the problem is so much that the kids aren't obvious sometimes, but that the rest of the bureaucracy is designed to fail.
It's a good point, and the behavioral assessment team can be the threat assessment team made up of senior managers from the various, if you will, entities of a school, of a city, including law enforcement, and they collectively need to act, right? They collect all this information, and some schools are not connecting the dots, just like we did and we didn't do on 9/11. So we have all this information from a school teacher, maybe the gym teacher, maybe the cafeteria worker, but we're not knowing is essentially connecting the dots and looking at a particular student holistically. And of course, we have this information now that maybe we turn into intelligence. We have to act. And the failure to act is
And
yes,
what kind of
part
action
of the problem.
Do you are you advocating?
What kind of I'm sorry, I missed you.
What kind of action are you advocating? You say we have to act. So what are you advocating?
Yes, good question, Karen. Everything from you know, services relating to counseling services to expulsion from school to potential criminal justice issues as far as maybe an arrest if need be. So, you know, you have many tools in your tool belts, right? And so we have a variety of tools that we can use for, I'll say, problem children. But it's too late by the time they get to high school, in my opinion. We need to address students early.
Yeah, Eric, let me forgive me again. You know, a little bit more pushback here. Among my many my checkered past includes an MSW from Columbia University. So I was in the mental health field for quite a few years. And I think people who aren't in the mental health field ascribe an ability to read the future that mental health professionals don't have. And mental health in general, psychology, is kind of more of an art than a science.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
yes.
to put the lives of innocent kids into the hands of a bunch of bureaucrats who've already shown that they can't even teach math or English. Here's what I wonder. I am from Colorado. You may have not heard that when we got disconnected. And I was living in Colorado during the Columbine shooting, which seemed to have spurred many more copycat killings along the way. I was there handing out Kleenex, which did absolutely nothing. There wasn't anything I could do at that time. But something that I do know, and I wonder what you think about this, I know somebody in Colorado who is engaged in a very a growing program that arms teachers. Not all of them. Only people who are extremely well-trained, only people who are voluntary. It's not mandatory, but teachers are trained in school. Now, that doesn't depend on being able to read the future. Are you for that or are you against that?
Well, Karen, it's a good question. My initial feelings on that, I would say I'm against that. And you might say, why? And
I would.
I see a classroom with a teacher. Again, he or she may not have the training, proper training that a law enforcement.
Well, they would be
has.
Trained. They would not be able to do it without a lot of training. I know somebody who trains them, so it's sort of interesting. I know somebody who trains them.
Well, go ahead. I just think there are many. Probably more negatives than positives that stems from arming teachers. Uh-huh. I'm afraid that.
And what would the negative be?
Well, one possibility, the shoot, no shoot situation scenario in a classroom it takes a trained professional to make that mm-hmm. split second decision. Now, and where will that weapon be? Will it be on the teacher's hip? Will it be on her or in her bag? Will it be locked or unlocked?
Uh-huh.
There's a lot, and then fights in the classroom. The students may overpower the teacher and who they know has a weapon and use that weapon against him or her or other classmates. There's a lot of, questions and ramifications that we really should be looking at before we start arming teachers.
Yeah, and not all of them. And only because I am aware of the program that they actually mm-hmm. do with mm-hmm. interested teachers, those are all extremely well taken and important questions. I probably think maybe in the future I'll try to get her on the air, just to talk about that program so our listeners will have a better idea, and I could ask her some of those challenging questions.
Yeah.
But among the most, the best arguments that I've heard for mm-hmm. it, we don't have to belabor the point, is that we have armed guards and stuff to guard our money in banks and all kinds of places, but we don't use that kind of stopping power when little kids are sent to school, and it just seems like a very passive answer to mm-hmm. say, well, we have to track all the students. Well, none of that guarantees that innocent kids will come home in one piece from school. We're depending on a very precarious kind of a so-called science, and you're taking away more privacy. So I just am concerned about that. Final thoughts, and where can people read more about this?
Well, thanks for having me, Karen. My website is Switched On Life. Switched On Life. I have articles there, and I also have my book, Switched On: The Heart and Mind of a Special Agent. You can get a glimpse behind the badge of an agent in my 25 years
wow.
Of doing law enforcement and domestically as well as internationally. What we're talking about is a difficult, topic. But I think we have to agree that what we're doing is not working, that we need to start, looking at other options to keep our kids safe in our schools in America. And from 30,000 feet up down to the ground level. And you have to agree, over the course of these last, decades, our fatherless society is certainly not contributing to our children's well-being. Our godless society is not contributing to our children's well-being
right.
as well. And so there's a multiple reasons why America has become obsessed with crime.
Yeah, we got to run, but I couldn't agree more. Anna, thank you for letting me ask those tough questions. Everybody, get the book Switched On: The Heart and Mind of a Special Agent. Thank you so much, Eric Karen, for joining us. We'll have to have you back. When we
thank
come
you,
back, my pleasure. When we come back, we'll have another guest, totally different subject. When we get back, we'll switch gears. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off. Don't go away.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline. Ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived in Philadelphia. Local time is 3:05 p.m. and the temperature is 67 degrees. At this time, you are now free to use your cellular devices.
You know that feeling when you get to turn your phone on after the plane lands? You can have that feeling every time you drive. Make sure your cell phone is stowed away whenever you are behind the wheel.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back to Spouting Off. It's Christmas week. Christmas Eve is Friday. Have you noticed that when Christmas is at the end of the week or Christmas Eve, which I think almost everybody's taking off Friday, we'll have a show on Friday, that they take off the entire week. I think that's how it is. And people are just in the mood to have a break. And can you blame them? I mean, we have had a long and difficult year, I would say, with the presidential potted plant. That's what I call him. And it looks to be that we're going to have to gird our loins for the coming year as well. But for now, I wish you all a Merry Christmas. We're not done yet, but Merry Christmas, and we'll be here to, you know, shepherd you through. I am happy to welcome our next guest, founder and president of the Hosea Initiative, author of What If We've Been Wrong. She is a pro-life advocate, and she's here to talk about this case that I talked at some length about. So glad to have her. The case that we heard the hearing with the U.S. Supreme Court, the case of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. Welcome, Terry Beatley, to Spouting Off here on WSMN.
Hey, Karen. Glad to be on your show.
Well, I'm happy to have you. And because time is always so short, I want to cut right to the chase. And when I was reading about you, it says Dr. Bernard Nathanson, America's abortion king, granted you with the keys to expose all the lies the abortion industry is founded upon. And you've been commissioned to teach America about the 8 points of propaganda about Planned Parenthood. Please enlighten us about these 8 points of propaganda, would you?
Well, I think the key thing is for everybody to know that Dr. Bernard Nathanson was the father of America's industry of abortion. He co-founded NARAL, Pro-Choice America, the first pro-abortion political action organization. He trained Planned Parenthood doctors on how to kill babies in the womb. And then in the year that he celebrated Roe v. Wade in 1973, about 6 months later, the father of America's industry of abortion sees the baby for the first time on a brand new technology, real-time ultrasound, and it began his pro-life conversion. And America doesn't know his story. It was a rare interview on December 1st, 2009. And at the end of the interview, I said, Dr. Nathanson, if you have a message for America, tell me what it is, and I promise you I'll deliver it across our country until it becomes common knowledge or until Roe v. Wade is overturned. And he said, yes. He said, continue teaching the strategy of how I deceived America. Then he said, tell America that the co-founder of NARAL says to love one another, abortion is not love. Stop the killing. The world needs more love, and I'm all about love now. Powerful statement.
Well, you know, it's... forgive me, but didn't Roe also, the woman who was Alice Roe, I guess her first name was, she had Norma. A conversion too, didn't she?
Yeah, Norma McCorvey. She's the Roe of Roe v. Wade.
Right.
And in the back of my book, I have the two things. One, her affidavit from 30 years after Roe v. Wade, when she petitioned the Supreme Court to overturn Roe. She never had an abortion. She never knew what an abortion, I mean, back in the late or early 70s, she didn't even know what an abortion was when the two attorneys took her out to a pizza beer joint and got her drunked up on two pitchers of beer to get her to agree to sign on to be the plaintiff in Roe v. Wade. And so, yes, she became a...
Why her? I mean...
For whatever reason, they were looking for a poor, white, young woman, pregnant, that was the mold, I guess you'd say, of the person they for whatever reason, the attorneys wanted, the ideal plaintiff. And so it's her reading her affidavit. I mean, if every American read the book that I wrote, which they can access at abortionking.com, they will learn two of the most important stories of all time, at least in terms of this issue. So, because also at the back of the book is an appendix written by Norma McCorvey's attorneys, her pro-life attorneys, when she tried to overturn Roe. They wrote an appendix called A Sumicide, and it explains the six erroneous assumptions the Supreme Court made back in 1973 with the Roe case. So you'll read the affidavit, then you'll read what the attorneys wrote, and then you learn the whole story about Dr. Bernard Nathanson's conversion from America's abortion king to becoming pro-life, and then later he became a Christian. And he wanted everybody to know he's literally the poster child for divine mercy, to have been the father of America's industry of abortion, where he was personally responsible for the death of 75,000 babies, including the death of his own child. He aborted his own baby. Then he skidded the tracks for Roe v. Wade with, you know, propaganda. And America doesn't know that this doctor became pro-life, and he left it all in writing, in audio, on the interview that I had with him, all the
truth. Is he still alive?
What he did. No, he died about a year after I interviewed him. He was 83 years old and terminally ill with cancer when I interviewed him in Manhattan on December 1st, 2009. He died February 2011. And so I've been working this promise ever since, really 2009. You know, how do you teach a nation, right? How do you teach a nation of what the father of the abortion industry did? And so you asked about the 8 points of propaganda, and people can read it.
Yes.
We finally put this in what's called a fact check booklet. And you can find this booklet on our website, hoseaforyou.org. That's H-O-S-E-A, the number 4, Y-O-U.O-R-G, hoseaforyou.org. It's a little 4-by-6-inch booklet called Fact Check, Who is America's Abortion King? And it explains the 8 points of propaganda that Dr. Nathanson deployed. And this is one of the things he wanted everybody to know. I can run through the 8 points real quick if that.
Please, I would love for you to. I think our audiences absolutely do want to know.
Well, it's amazing because we sell these literally by the cases. They're 200 in a case. Mm. I think it's $340 for a little 44 page booklet, which explains the most pertinent information, you know, and all this he admitted to. So the first thing he did was they hired a public relations firm. And they figured out, okay, we're going to frame the argument around choice. Americans love choices, right?
Yeah. Except today, they're giving them up. But that's
true,
another
right,
story.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. It is amazing, yeah. You know. Oh, suddenly we have a choice,
though?
Right? Point number two, they crafted the slogans like "My Body, My Choice," "Abortion's a Personal Decision." A lot of these slogans are still being used today. Well, they paid a public relations firm $7,500 to sit around a table and to drum up this marketing strategy. And with the slogan, point number three is they manipulated and used the media, because the media is very complicit. And he was an OBGYN, so he could tell these young reporters almost anything, and they would believe it, and they would turn right around and report it as fact. And so what would he tell them? That's point number four. Well, he told them fabricated facts. Another word for that is lies. He would tell these young reporters that 1 million women a year are having back alley abortions and 5,000 to 10,000 women a year are dying due to complications. Well, it sounds like an epidemic. That's what he was trying to make it sound like. But the problem is they were all lies. There were never 1 million illegal abortions. On the high side, it was around 98,000. And there were never 5,000 to 10,000 women dying per year. On the high side, it was 200 to 250 women, not 5,000 or 10,000. Low side, it was single digits or in the 20s. But as an OBGYN, he could tell the media any of this, and they ran with it. And then the public relations firm recommended that he use some strong polling data. So he would tell the reporters that 60% of Americans want abortion on demand legalized. When I sat with him, I said, "Where did you get the 60% number?" And he said, "Terry, I pulled it out of thin air."
Hello?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. We're having a couple of little issues here. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So the real polling statistic was 0.1% of Americans wanted abortion on demand legalized. And he would tell the media 60%, but the real number, 0.1%. So very audacious. And then they would repeat the lies over and over again in the media. And we all know, repeat it long enough, it begins to sound like the truth. And then point number seven is he would justify decriminalizing abortion. He would say, "Look, we just need to make it legal so that, you know, the doctors aren't felons, the women aren't felons." And the problem
right.
with that is,
and I remember all that.
Yeah.
And they'll be rare. Remember that? They're going to be safe and they're going to be rare.
Right.
We're not encouraging it. We just want them to be rare and safe. You know what? That didn't happen either.
No. Yeah, later on, it's like,
no, they celebrate them today.
That's right. And then the last thing is he deployed the Catholic strategy, which was a political strategy to deceive enough Catholic voters into supporting pro-abortion candidates. It's way too many details to get into it for this interview. But just know that people can go onto our website or onto our YouTube channel or Rumble, and we have these presentations. One is called The Deadliest American Hoax. The other one is The Catholic Strategy. And so and get the book at abortionking.com. I can't encourage enough people to get it, because it's, you will learn so much, and it'll help prepare you to be able to defend the dignity of human life with confidence.
So important. Give those resources again. I still have more questions to ask you, but go ahead and give all of that so people can either write it down or hear it again, okay?
Well, you can get the What If We've Been Wrong book. And by the way, the title of my book comes from the never seen before resignation letter of Dr. Bernard Nathanson when he resigned from NARAL. He has a compelling quote in there, and part of it is, "And what if we've been wrong?" So you can get that at abortionking.com. And it is a great value. I think it's like $19.95. But it's not only the story of Bernard Nathanson and his conversion, but it's also my journey in getting one of Virginia's most pro-abortion, anti-parental rights state senators defeated by educating people about all this. And then at the back of the book, you have all these appendices, you know, the affidavit from Norma McCorvey, and then the assumicide written by her attorneys, and a whole lot more.
Hello.
It's packed full of information.
Okay. We do have a few more minutes left, and I'm telling you, you know, we've had a couple of little glitches in our connection today. I don't know why. I'm hardwired into the internet, but that's beside the point. Let me ask you this. What? This is the most, the thing that I wonder most. With everything that you've said, why is, in your opinion, the left so desperate to elevate abortion that they're willing to pay so much money to change people's minds, to market to Catholics, all of that? It must be awfully important for them to elevate abortion as some kind of a high-minded freedom idea, which is preposterous. Why? Why do you think?
I mean, for me, I have to answer it through the spiritual lens. I'm a Christian, and we do know that abortion is a satanic sacrifice. We do know that. For a couple of years, I had my own podcast, and I interviewed a man, Jeremy Taylor, I think is his name, and he used to be a high, well, I forget the name, but like a high priest in the satanic temple, and he was part of 140 abortions. Okay, and he says anybody, he's now a Christian, but he says anybody who thinks that abortion is not a satanic sacrifice, they have their head in the sand. So, does that mean, you know, that's not meant with condemnation to the women out there who have had abortions, but Satan thirsts, and there's no better way to feed him than with the blood of the innocents. This has gone on for 2,000 years, and it's time for Americans to awaken. The entire industry is based on lies and propaganda. The father of the industry came clean and admitted to all of his lies and propaganda and deception and exploitation of women. And it doesn't require being a Christian to recognize that you're being intellectually dishonest with yourself to defend legalized abortion. Now, even Dr. Nathanson, still as an atheist, he said he had to be intellectually honest with himself when he saw real-time ultrasound and he recognized the humanity of the person in the womb.
I'll tell you what I think of, and I came extremely late to the table on this issue. I mean, I was pro-choice on libertarian views. I did not want the government to be dictating one way or the other. But when I see not only the eugenics roots of abortion, but the fact that we are now watching the extreme of the kind of stuff we've been watching for the last several decades, in which now it isn't just abortion and it is horrible, but it's now euthanasia on the other end. And the radical left today elevates death. It's a death cult. It's hard to not see that at this point in time when the Empire State Building was lit up because they were celebrating abortion at 9 months and even in some cases after a baby has come down the birth canal. I mean, at some point you have to say, wait a minute.
When is enough enough?
Unfortunately, when is enough enough? And that's true of liberty. That's true of the kind of thing we're fighting right now. Unabated, it all seems more connected than we'd like to admit. I've got to wrap up the show. Terry Beatty, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Highly enlightening. I hope people will get your book.
Thank you, Karen. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bless you, too. Well, that does it for us. Thank you to everyone who makes this show possible. We'll see you on Thursday at 1 p.m. and Friday at 2 p.m. until January, which will always be Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern. More we'll let you know. Take care, be strong.
WSMN 1590, WSMN 95.